Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 46, and Merry, Merry, Merry Christmas. We've had an incredible year here at Real World Theology, and we have been so blessed by you guys listening, giving us feedback, interacting with us as we've grown and reviewed more and more and more movies. So our Christmas present, as usual, I say as usual, this is only the second annual, but hopefully there will be many more to come, is reviewing a Christmas movie or a Christmas show just for you guys. So this year we're reviewing Elf. Laura and Mark join me. If you listen to the show on any regular basis, then you know that they are very familiar. They are fun to listen to. And we talk about our own Christmas traditions, our own Christmas films, our favorite films, the films that we tend to pass over. But when talking about Elf, we talk about wonder, we talk about unfettered optimism, and we talk about this film that's come onto the scene fairly recently, but yet already found a way to plug itself into our Christmas traditions and into our hearts. And we even maybe get into talking about how Kirk Cameron is trying to take the moss out of Christmas. So I hope you enjoy it, and again, have a Merry, Merry Christmas. Here it is, episode 46, Elf and Putting the Moss in Christmas. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. I know that Laura and I technically will have a lot of the same traditions, but there are things that we wish we had more time for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So with that understanding, what would be your tradition if you could have it? What are your traditions that you have now when it comes to Christmas movies or Christmas TV shows or whatever? Like, what would you want to squeeze in, or what do you want to make sure that you catch every year at Christmas?
You and I have been talking recently about how, like, we always want to watch A Muppet Christmas Carol, and we never get around to it.
And it's on Netflix now, so we're totally going to do that.
Yeah, we need it this year. But, of course, you and I
have it on Blu-ray.
I have a lot
I've
of...
I want it on Blu-ray.
I have a lot of movie traditions with my family, but you and I, our Christmas movie tradition is Die Hard on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we really have any
others.
Is
every guy's favorite?
It's my wife's favorite Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's my favorite Christmas movie. I love it.
Ho ho ho, now I have a gun.
Now I have a machine gun.
Oh yeah, now a machine gun. Well, so Mark, is there anything that you've already established, either with where the family that you've, you know, come from, mm-hmm. or the family that you now have? Is there anything that is, and is there anything that you hope to be?
Will be.
Yeah, that will be.
I hope I get to travel in time with the doctor, some Christmas. That would be great.
I'm speaking more of not, like, what do you want to watch, not what do you want to be when experience. You grow up.
I hope this Doctor Who special is really good. I like to watch Doctor Who at Christmas
now. I'm noticing
a
pattern.
Yeah, Doctor Who. You know, I really like to, stick to the stuff that, like, I do every year, which is basically, you know, there's certain decorations that I really like to put up, and we like to, you know, pick out a tree, and we like to do all the normal stuff, you know, like have dinner with family, and, you know, all those things, even though they're simple and they're traditional, those are all my favorite. That's why, like, I like Christmas, because it is tradition. Christmas allows you to kind of look back and reevaluate the year and your family and the past, and look towards the future with a little bit of hope. You know, it's a enlightened time of, like, you know, everything's feels a little bit lighter. And so I like to watch movies too. I mean, are we saying our favorite movies, or are we just like?
Well, I mean, yeah. Which, like I said, okay. I want to start with: are there anything that you're already doing?
Or is any, you know, did your family always get together like on Saturday night before Christmas or whatever and watch Rudolph?
Oh yeah.
Or well, you know, really like did they do the Rudolph Frosty thing? Yeah. Like, because there were things that we did when we grew up, and then like I said, were there any things that now, obviously, part of either the Wingert or current tradition in the form your family's in now is to watch, you know, the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Yeah.
But is that it? And then, you know, because like I said, we're getting invited to lots of Christmas movie watching parties. Right. And it's interesting to me to see how those things, those movies and films, are different than when I grew up.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think we had a specific thing growing up of like that we watched. We just kind of watched whatever was on TV or like the Christmas type movies that you watch. Mm-hmm. Home Alone. You know, I remember going to see when I was a kid, Home Alone Lost in New York in the theater, and it was like, you know, that was a Christmas movie, and it felt like Christmas, and, it, you know, that's still part of tradition. I like that movie a lot, and I went and saw the Santa Claus in the theater, and so, I tend to like most of the good Christmas movies. You know, people try to, you know.
Oh, so you're talking about Jingle All the Way.
Yeah. I actually like Jingle All the Way. I love Jingle All the Way. Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of crappy, horrible Christmas movies.
Hallmark Christmas movies?
No, actually, Ben Affleck was in one called Saving Christmas, and it's not just the worst Christmas movie, it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I'm not even kidding. If you've never seen
it, but it couldn't be worse than horrendous. Kirk Cameron Saves Christmas.
Well, now that Kirk Cameron wanted to come in and just ruin Christmas, and he did. I mean, he just ruined a Christmas movie. I don't know. Call that a Christmas movie? I don't even know. I've known nothing about it.
I like to think that he was taking the war on Christmas to the next level. Like, he wasn't trying to put the Christ in Christmas. He was trying to take the moss out of Christmas.
That's right.
You know? So
that's very well put. I like that,
you know,
a lot.
What,
yeah, I like that a lot.
Hold on, sir.
You can have that one.
Yep.
I'll let all the rest of you use that
actually,
one.
Actually, you know, I keep thinking about this. I think I've seen like all of the like good like 90s Christmas movies in the theater. Like, I saw Muppet Christmas Carol in the theater when I was a kid.
Yeah, I saw none of those in the theater.
Yeah.
I've seen them, but not in theater.
Right. I always enjoy TNT's A Christmas Carol, A Christmas Story marathon, you know, where they do 24 hours of A Christmas Story. I always like to catch it at different points and like see the whole movie in like the whole day, you know.
Yeah. Just,
I like that movie a lot. I know some people are
well, that's weird because like it's one of those movies that I'm like, okay, that's great that you like this movie, but people who love the movie, there's something about it that I don't get. And
well, I think it represents pretty well a lot of people's childhoods, you know, especially like older, like adults, because like that was like the 50s and 60s and that kind of era of like, you know, the cowboy shotgun or whatever that you want, the BB gun, and it represents that time pretty well, and it represents Christmas tradition pretty well, and I just think it's funny.
So. I feel like for a Christmas movie, I want something a little more hopeful than Ralphie getting dumped on for an hour and a half.
But it is hopeful because once he finally,
so realistic.
There's a really great moment when he finally gets that gun, because like he thinks he doesn't get it, and like it's his dad. You find out that his dad is just as excited as he is to give it to him, and that's just a really cool moment of like deny. Yeah, they shoot that, which is great.
It's terrible.
I love
it's
it.
Terrible. Okay, so.
Wait, I had a question. So does that mean that you went to theater a lot at Christmas? Like, that was a tradition?
Oh, yeah. We went to theater every Christmas day and saw a Christmas movie.
Cool.
Not necessarily a Christmas-themed movie, but, like, saw a movie on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw
it came out on Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Mikey and I started trying to do that. I really like that a lot.
Yeah, it's
like,
a lot of fun.
Well, I guess we only started last year because we saw Les Mis, right? Was that last year?
Oh, I feel like we've done 2 years now.
What have we seen? Les Mis couldn't have been last year. That was 2 years ago, right?
That was 2 years ago.
What was last year?
A couple years ago, I saw True Grit. That was one. That might have been 3 years ago.
That was a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have to go back and look. I don't remember what was this past year. I don't think we...
But I'm really excited about this year! Into the Woods! I can't wait to watch that movie.
And I think that's the current plan. We'll see.
Yeah.
There's timetables and families that need to be visited. So, Laura, what movies did you watch growing up with your family?
We always watched two versions of A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
And my dad always refers to them based on the guy who plays Scrooge, but I can't remember who that you know, who the guy's name was.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I feel like William Hartnell played Scrooge at some point. I could be totally wrong
just
about that.
Just because he looks like Scrooge.
Yeah, maybe he just looks like a Scrooge. I want to say that one of the doctors played Scrooge. But we always watch White Christmas, which I love.
Oh, okay. I was thinking White Christmas was the racist one. That's
no,
Holiday Inn.
That's Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn has some blackface going on.
Oh, man. I watched Holiday Inn for the first time. And I was like, oh, no. Yeah. This is happening.
Yeah. Those are the two that come to mind. Christmas here. Oh, Wonderful Life. But I feel nervous saying this, but sometimes Wonderful Life bores me.
Huh.
I mean, sometimes I really feel always, it, but I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, no, that was always my mom's favorite, mm-hmm. not just favorite Christmas movie, that has always been her favorite movie.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were always really traditional, always loved Christmas, and so that was a big part of it, too, because we always watched that every year, but that was more her than, mm-hmm. I love that movie, I mean, I love the idea and the story and everything, mm-hmm. but.
How many times has it been, like, ripped off or
yeah,
whatever?
Ripped off, yeah, for
I mean,
sure.
Reimagined,
iconic.
Let's say reimagined.
Yeah,
it's definitely iconic. I guess I just have seen it way too many times in my life.
There's something about like Christmas movies that have most of them have redemption of mm-hmm. some kind. And redemption is really attractive, and you know you can dislike It's a Wonderful Life, but you know I think everybody can understand the redemption of that movie. And,
oh,
and
yeah.
Jimmy Stewart, you know, running through the streets like screaming with joy, like oh
Mara
my god,
Mara
Christmas, Mara Christmas.
I would
it's
be
really
clear
great,
that
man.
I have not said that I dislike.
No, I you. No, yeah,
we're all fun.
Okay, good.
Side note, favorite,
like I said,
favorite line, I'm nervous. Favorite line from that movie is when he sees the star on the Christmas tree and he says, "Attaboy, Clarence." It'll get you every time. It'll get you every time.
So those are the ones growing up. The ones that I want to watch, I always want to watch Die Hard, and of all, really, of all the Doctor Who Christmas specials, A Christmas Carol, I love to watch that movie. It's so good.
We should be doing this on Die Hard. That's what we should be doing.
I know, seriously.
You thought you were getting Elf, but we're actually
we have to do that.
I've already got the next 3 years of Real World Theology Christmas specials.
Yeah, but then
scheduled.
You can wait a whole year.
I know. So
then we could get 6 more Die Hard films between now and then, right?
So I've got the next oh, there's so many Christmas movies that I want to podcast on. So maybe we'll squeeze in one to a December schedule outside of the actual Christmas episode. But I'd love having the special Christmas episode. The
yeah.
whole reason
yeah.
that we're having this episode right now is to follow in one of my favorite traditions, which is to have the special Christmas episode, which we used to do when I was a kid. I remember, like, hey, I'm watching, you know, a serialized TV show, yeah. and it always had the Christmas episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, like, the Christmas episode that aired, like, December 2nd before the season stopped, but, like, they would always have, you know, the whatever Christmas episode right around Christmas.
Hmm.
And I loved waiting for those things. I really enjoyed actually, you know, since we didn't have Netflix, we were watching normal TV back then. You know, waiting for actually, my dad would always want us to watch Rudolph. Rudolph is his jam. He loves Rudolph, and I hate that because I really can't stand Rudolph.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It bores me, and I really think the overall message of Rudolph in general is pretty horrific.
Yeah.
At least, you know, at a glance, I'm sure there's some things that could be added, and the fact that they kind of tacked on the Island of Misfit Toys does help it a little
mm-hmm.
bit. But in general, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm like, your dad is kind of a donder or whatever.
Yeah,
that's the thing about.
Yeah, donder is a jerk was like our tagline from
yeah.
watching it a couple
but,
years ago.
But like, you know, I enjoyed watching Frosty, but I got tired of watching Frosty after a couple years.
I'm not sure I've ever seen Frosty.
You're not missing. Oh, never mind. I know some people are going to love Frosty. And this,
yeah.
this is the beautiful thing about
yeah.
Christmas stuff, because there's a whole lot of tradition to it. My favorite when I was growing up was always How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That has always gotten me, and it continues as something that I want to watch every year. That and A Charlie Brown Christmas were the ones when I grew up I wanted to watch more than anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my favorite. Currently, it's interesting because we haven't really, besides our, after we go to church on Sunday night, on Christmas Eve for the candlelight service, we always come home, build a fire, and we watch Die Hard. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that we have in hard tradition besides us starting over the past 2 years to go to a movie on Christmas Day mm-hmm. before we go hang out with family. But what I would like to add to that is maybe a movie marathon, because I started listing a couple movies that I wanted to see every Christmas, mm-hmm. and there's a whole great list, but then I realized there's things that we watch anyway. I can't imagine going a Christmas without watching The Community.
Oh, yeah.
Musical Christmas special.
The Glee
yeah.
one.
The one that makes fun of Glee. That is probably one of my current favorite Christmas specials. And I've actually been, like, every day since we've watched that 2 weeks ago, I've probably been like, Christmas, it's you know.
I got a Christmas.
But I also like Abed's the claymation
one.
Yeah.
But so there's been some great Christmas episodes, and like I said, almost every TV show has a Christmassy episode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But lots of them are just more of the same, and so it's nice to see someone like take the time and really put the effort into Christmas. So those are the things that are leaking in to our mm-hmm. our traditions. Like I can't, like I said, I can't imagine yeah. going a Christmas right. without watching that now.
It's interesting to me how long it takes to establish traditions. Right. I guess I take them for granted because like I'm like, oh, we always do this. We've always done this mm-hmm. like as a kid. But for us, we've been married 9.5 years and we're just now establishing some things that like we won't let go of. Mm-hmm. Like I think just in the last couple of years, we were like, look, this is a special time for us. We want to be in our home on Christmas morning and open our stockings. And we used to travel, like, on Christmas morning or be gone. But now we're like, that's really sacred to us. So, but that took, like, 6 years
yeah.
to do, to make that decision.
Well, it's hard because when you're a kid, like, every year is pretty much the same. You know, you have, mm-hmm. you know, you're in grade school, so every year kind of works the same way, you know. And so you kind of, the traditions kind of stay. But, like, when you, as you grow up and you go to college, like, everything has to kind of change. And then you kind of have to redevelop new stuff and bring in the old stuff, so.
Yeah, so you get married, you have two different family traditions that you're merging into one.
Right.
And we tried to do everything for a long time, and it took us, like, 6 or 7 years before we said, let's just throw all this out. Mm-hmm. Not because it's bad or, you know, good. Let's just...
Just to recreate.
Let's just take everything, etch a sketch it, shake it, mm-hmm. and, you know, list everything that we can do, and let's see what we would enjoy the most during this time. Right. And so we've come up with our own traditions of getting up, just being the two of us, if at all possible. Unless we have to travel somewhere for like a huge family gathering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like somewhere far away.
Yeah. And then going to the theater, eating Chinese food, and then going and spending the rest of the day and then the next day with family because mm-hmm. we want to spend time with family. But I've noticed that over the course, like I said, films and TV shows always tend to be an integral part of lots of people's Christmas, even if you're not really like a film person
mm-hmm. yeah,
or you're not true. Really like a TV person.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's those people who like, oh, I never watch TV. I don't have cable. I don't have time. But they will find a way to watch, you know, How the Grinch Stole Christmas mm-hmm. or Rudolph, you know, around the time. Or people who are really into it like us, and I'm like, I really want to have a marathon uh-huh. at some point around Christmas. I want to start like the first annual, you know, Fissile, you know, Christmas movie marathon, and people can just come in. Like, I'll send them a list of the movies, what times they're going to play at, because I was literally like, when am I going to watch all these Christmas movies? Because I want to watch them up at Christmas Carol. I love It's a Wonderful Life, and I never get to see it enough mm-hmm. to be bored, because we never watched it growing up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think I saw it once growing up, but it wasn't because, like, it was a movie that my family watched.
Right.
Hmm. And so I haven't been tired of it yet.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it in many years, so I don't know.
Oh, it makes me cry every time.
Yeah.
Every time he's running through those streets and just redemption.
Well, and like, great. There's movies that I think lots of people, like, there are some people who say it's not Christmas until I watch It's a Christmas Vacation. Mm-hmm. And while it's not, like, number one on my list, I'm like, okay, I can see how Christmas Vacation.
Confession time. Never seen it.
Never seen it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how all these years I've managed to not see it. I've seen Vacation,
mm-hmm.
and what's the one after it? European. I've seen European Vacation. I've never seen Christmas Vacation. I don't know why, and everybody talks about it all the time. I've just never seen it.
So if we had a first annual Fissile Movie Marathon, you could totally catch it.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The one that I don't like, isn't it?
You said you didn't really.
It's got Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Chevy Chase fan either.
Well, and neither am I. I think it's a pretty good movie, but I think for the same reason that you were talking about Christmas Story, it reminds a lot of people of theirs, obviously in an over-exaggerated way.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like you were saying about Rudolph. I mean, Rudolph, is it a good movie, enjoyable movie, like in today's thing? It's more about nostalgia than like being a good movie. And,
And there's not really a lot of things wrong with that. And in general, I would love to hear what more people's traditions entail. But the reason that we've chosen the movie we've chosen for this episode is because I have noticed over the past 2 years, especially after starting Real World Theology, that when it comes around to Christmas time, more people get excited about Elf than almost any other movie that I've seen.
It's the modern tradition.
It is now the new Christmas movie tradition. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, because I enjoyed it the first time I saw it, but I never thought it would be like every year. Like, this is the thing people wait for. Like, we watch this movie on Thanksgiving Day or the day after Thanksgiving to get ready for Christmas. Mm-hmm. We put this movie on when we, you know, put up our tree and stuff like that. And I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously something about this movie that came out in 2003. So it's fairly recent as far as movies go, especially to have something that is considered a tradition to have made it into this elite group. Because Christmas movies come out every year. Lots and lots of Christmas movies come out every year.
Lots and lots of bad ones.
And there's lots and lots of bad ones. And so you take a movie that stars Will Ferrell, and you're like, okay, you know, Will Ferrell hits it for some people, doesn't hit it for others, but most of the time he's doing his Will Ferrell shtick. And I think this is one of the few movies that he does that is outside of his shtick.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But he still brings, like, you know, his particular brand of comedy. So I think that one of the beautiful things about Elf is that it's accessible to everyone, not just like Will Ferrell fans.
Right, yeah.
Which is what I think some of his best movies done. I mean, I think Stranger Than Fiction is the other example that people probably didn't see at first because Will Ferrell was in it.
Yeah.
And then people went back and watched, you know, word of mouth and stuff like that. Yeah. Proves that Will Ferrell does have a lot to offer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously, you know, people expect him to come to the box office to bring people to the box office for one reason.
Yeah. And I mean, it's his shtick is funny. I mean, he's good.
Well, his stick makes a lot of money. So
yeah.
I mean, we all enjoy Anchorman.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, and just within his stick, some movies work and some don't. Anchorman works, Anchorman 2 doesn't.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
true. You know, Talladega Night. Well, this isn't about that.
This is sort of about Will Ferrell.
Yeah, okay, so, but you also, this movie was directed, is one of the early movies that Jon Favreau directed.
Yeah.
And he's gone on to, you know, direct Iron Man. And, you know, Cowboys and Aliens. Mm-hmm. He's directing a Jungle Book adaptation right now. So he's, you know, this is one of his first.
Yeah.
And show that he could kind of bring something to life. It has a great cast. James Caan, Bob Newhart, Ed Asner, Mary Steenburgen, Zooey Deschanel. You may not have recognized her because her hair is weird, sadly.
That's really weird.
And even a much younger Peter Dinklage than we're used to seeing in Game of Thrones. So the basic synopsis of the movie is one that we've heard a lot of times. We've seen played out. It's like the you don't fit in, you know, trying
fish
to find
out of water.
Yeah, fish out of water, trying to figure out where you belong, you know, who you are, identity crisis. And the actual synopsis says that after not fitting in with the elf community due to his ungainly size, a man adopted and raised as an elf at the North Pole is sent to the U.S. in search of his true identity and family. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a, like I said, on its surface, doesn't seem to be that amazing. Or doesn't seem like it's going to be a standout film. One, again, not that just is a good film, but has transcended the we enjoy it to we have to watch it. And I think that's the most important thing that I kind of want to like harp on. You know, we're not reviewing this film because we just picked a random movie out of a hat. We picked this film because I've already seen the movie. I was asked to watch it once, and we're going to a party to watch the movie in 2 days, which will be before this actually comes out. So there's something about it.
Yeah.
So,
but it's, I mean, the premise is really simple, but that, like, that's the thing I think that, that is the draw of this film, that it's so pure and like naive and simple. Mm-hmm. And, actually I was thinking about how It's a little bit ironic. Maybe could it be counterproductive to have, like, a deep theological discussion about a movie that's essentially about, like, the folly of trying to be a grown-up and trying to take things too seriously, you know?
You can absolutely have a deep theological discussion about it.
Yes. It feels counterproductive a little bit, but... Yeah, I mean...
Well, so what hits you about the movie then? Like, why do you want to watch this movie every year?
I may not be the best person to start that off because it's not necessarily my go-to. I do love this movie, but it's not, like, one that I'm like, I have to watch this movie. I don't know. Is it my go-to?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of this, you know, it kind of occurs to me, you know, we do this with films, we also do it with songs. Like, songs, you mm-hmm. know, we have those songs that everybody sings every year, you know, the very Christian ones and then very non-Christian ones. And, you know, there's a bunch of songs that come out every year, too. What is the transcendent point? Like, what makes it transcendent? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to pinpoint. You know, this movie works on a lot of levels for a lot of different people. And it works on a lot of levels for everybody that watches it, too. So it's like the humor is different mostly than any Christmas movie that I can think of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Santa Claus with Tim Allen gets kind of close to this kind of humor. Mm-hmm. But the Santa Claus goes more towards the family kind of side of it. Elf is not afraid to kind of be a little crude a little bit mm-hmm. at times. A little kind of edgy, you know, like the whole Peter Dinklage calling him an elf thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they take all the... They have a really good eye for taking Christmas traditions and kind of... you know, playing with them and spinning on them a little bit in this movie. There's a lot in this movie, and it's all about kind of how, you know, like if this had been done, like this movie was spinning around Hollywood apparently for, you know, 20 years or so, or maybe 10, 15 years before it got made. Different actors were attached. I mean, can you imagine Elf without Will Ferrell?
Yeah.
It just doesn't, originally back in the 90s, it was going to be Jim Carrey. Mm. I mean, it just would have been a very, very, very different movie. Maybe it still would have worked, but there's no way to know. So I think, you know, his kind of childlike take on everything is a part of everybody's tradition. Mm-hmm. Everybody sees Christmas as like, Santa's coming. Santa! I mean, you know, that's in everybody. And so everybody else around Elf is acting like the curmudgeon a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they're acting like... A lot of what I see in a lot of the other heroes of Christmas movies, like was George Daly in It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah,
is that his name? Jimmy Stewart's character is kind of like he hates life and he has to learn a lesson. And you know, so you kind of relate to him, but you kind of don't because not everybody's that much of a curmudgeon. You know, mm-hmm. even Tim Allen in the Santa Claus, he's kind of like, you know, this is kind of stupid the whole time. But then he starts to get into it. You know, Elf is just boyish wonder the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the only heroes that I've seen in Christmas movies that are like that. You know, a lot of Christmas movies that come out that are bad are like the people, Christmas again, I gotta put up lights on the house, and mm-hmm. We're gonna learn a lesson. You know, like, that doesn't...
Scrooge, you know?
Yeah.
There's a reason why that's like a term for people.
One of the quintessential stories and movies and things is the Christmas Carol, and the main character is Scrooge. You look at how Grinch stole Christmas. It's the Grinch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's the epitome of...
Well, it's lots of those curmudgeon-y movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Christmas Vacation does the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Charlie Brown Christmas. Charlie Brown's basically depressed.
Right, yeah.
And has to be Frosty, the dude who needs to be taught Christmas cheer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
And so it's like they have that in this movie through Walter, his dad, but the hero's Elf. And so the person you identify and go through the story with is somebody who has that boyish wonder of everybody.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. That we're not necessarily like our main point maybe is not going along with Walter and being like, you know, being in touch with our hatred of life and like changing that or whatever. Yeah. And I was thinking this morning about how interesting it is that like Buddy is such like a light. He's so bright and like illuminating that he exposes like the falseness around him. And I was thinking about how, you know, there are the obvious people who are like Grinches about Christmas or whatever, but then there are people who are in roles that seem cheerful or celebratory, like the fake Santa, who's like a drunk, like, you know, like the guy who like is the manager of like a children's Christmas store.
Mm-hmm. Like Walt. Bismarcky.
Yeah. Maybe. No, it's not Bismarcky. It's, I forget his name.
Oh man,
it's not Bismarcky.
I was only half paying attention when we were watching it.
And something that I hadn't even thought about before is that Walt and Peter Dinklage's character, what's mm-hmm. his name?
Miles Finch.
They are like, they're in charge of children's books, like children's stories. So there are people who are in roles in which they are, you know, their job is to bring joy and cheer and wonder. And, you know, Elf Buddy exposes the fact that it's all a sham, that they're not actually accomplishing what their role is meant to accomplish.
Yeah.
Sit on the throne of love. You don't smell like Santa, you smell like beef and cheese. I could do this all. I could do the whole movie. Just whole let me know.
Well, and so that's the thing. So Buddy is representative of how you can't really spread a message, whatever that message is, if you don't truly believe in it.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you're existing inside that message, but you're not actually, I mean, you're not really evangelizing it. And Buddy is evangelizing the message of Christmas.
Right.
Yeah. The in this movie, the truth of Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And
evangelism is not his point.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
a byproduct.
Goal. Right.
It's a byproduct of his childlike wonder.
He's just living what he believed. That's all. And, like, people are affected by it. Like, he's not forcing it on anybody. He just does it. And around people. Which is completely inverted from most other Christmas movies.
Right.
So everybody else is the perfect holiday cheer, and the Grinch is the one that needs to be converted, you know.
And if you think about it, this is just off the top of my head.
What if I don't think about it?
Then don't.
Okay.
But I'm going to.
Okay.
You, like, in those scenarios, very often the person who is, like, the holiday cheer, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of like, okay, they're a little bit annoying, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Even with, like, A Christmas Carol, the Cratchits are, like, they have so much happiness or joy. I guess you describe it as joy because it's like an unquenchable, deeper kind of happiness. We don't get to explore really a lot of where that comes from, so they're almost caricatures of what that should be like. Whereas, you know, with Buddy, we get to see him growing up, and we're with him. We're like, we get it. You grew up in this thing. We're on board with why you have, like, such a childlike wonder. And even though I think it's a little bit of a simplification, oversimplification that breaks down a little bit. I love when we're trying to look at a movie like Elf, a Will Ferrell movie, because we almost have this every episode, you know, like, how could this movie have truths that we could take away from it?
Mm-hmm.
I love that when James Harlan talks about this film, when he reviews it, he describes it as a special son raised in a Christmas paradise is sent south to a much harsher world where he sees the darkness in the world and overcomes it with a light in his eyes that refuses to be extinguished. So we basically have, Buddy is a, like Laura mentioned this already, Buddy has a light that he's bringing to a dark world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while he's, like I said, to a certain degree, evangelizing something that we don't believe is actually true, we see how his childlike faith and his ability to be amazed by the wonder and the magic of something that he is immersed in allows him to infect other people and bring joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, when I leave Elf, I'm like, this is the reason, like, towards the end, why I'm tearing up at a song that I hate. Because of all the Christmas songs in the world, the creepiest is Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Like, I refuse to sing it, but somehow this movie, it does such a good job of showing the necessity for wonder and belief.
Yeah.
That I'm there, and I'm tearing up, and I'm like, no!
Yeah,
he sees you when you're sleeping. Well, he knows when you're awake. This is really creepy.
You know, it's kind of a simplified, on the surface kind of message that this movie has, but you could take it, you know, way deeper. Like we're saying, And when Santa is first, which by the way, Ed Asner, best Santa, probably.
Possibly. I really like the Santa from Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh well, yeah, that's the classic Santa.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like,
classic Santa.
I feel like I shouldn't because the movie is like so. Oh, it's
super Christmas.
Yeah, it's like if there's a movie that I should be cynical about. I should be cynical about the movie, but it still does just enough, and it probably has. It's harder for me to be cynical about Christmas movies,
yeah.
which is saying something because I'm cynical about a lot of movies, yeah. You know. But for some reason, I'm like, okay, you got
me. Yeah, you got me. Yeah. But unless Kirk Cameron makes it. Yeah, unless Kirk Cameron makes it, you could be cynical all day. you just think of Kirk Cameron's face, and you're like, I'm cynical.
Yeah, like if
the face of cynicism.
I'm cynical right now.
But see, that's the thing. Like, so if we can contrast Christmas,
right,
and Kirk Cameron,
yes,
you know, Christmas, because of lots of the things that it invokes in us, hope, redemption, a second chance, things like this, the ability to be better than who we were for the rest of the year. Like, that gives Christmas movies a pass to some degree, which means you have to try really hard to make a bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a forgettable one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people already want to feel that.
Yeah, yeah. So you go into it wanting
to feel
it.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, Kirk Cameron has built a brand of what he would call truth telling, and I would call it bludgeoning.
Yeah.
And spirit divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And so that whenever he attaches his name to something, most people either are like, finally, and they're going to love it regardless of how bad it is, or there's people who would never give it a chance because he's, you know, it's like the boy who cried wolf to a certain degree. Like, he's made his thing.
Right.
I'm on a mission. I'm at war. Except he's not like Buddy spreading light.
Yeah.
He's like a curmudgeon spreading divisiveness.
There we go. It's full circle.
Full circle. Yeah,
well, I was going to say the simplified message that's on top of all this is when Santa's talking to Buddy about, you know, going to New York and like, oh, and by the way, your father, he's on the naughty list.
He's on the nut.
No! But what he says, the quote I pulled out was, you know, some people just lose sight of what's important in life, but that doesn't mean they can't find their way again. Maybe all they need is just a little Christmas spirit. And so that's when you get to the best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear. And so, you know, you kind of, that joy starts to emanate out of people through song, and, you know, that light has been spread, and people are spreading it through, you know, like over the TV, when that's a great, you know, kind of moment that they have, like being on the news and people start singing it everywhere, and you get this, you know, that's what's great. One of the things that works about this movie, I think people connect to, is having Christmas cheer. You know, Christmas spirit is important to just about everybody, you know, and so that's what works here, I think.
Well, I like the fact that they also, I think that's, I wouldn't call it a truth, but I would call it a keen observation.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though people love to sing, it's amazing what they'll allow themselves to sing at Christmas, regardless of their beliefs. Because people that will not go to a Christmas Eve service, they won't set foot in a church. I've noticed that they're more than willing to sing like Noel.
Yep.
Or Silent Night, Little Drummer Boy. I mean, like
Angels We've Heard on High.
There's a couple they still shy away from, like Away in a Manger, maybe. But like, for the most part, people who don't believe in this stuff are willing. There's something that hits them in the song. I mean, we can chalk it up to really great songs that I wish we had the ability to write more of, as opposed to lots of, I guess, mostly like Christmas music, like Christmas movies. Most of the Christmas music we get now is kind of,
well, that's the thing. I've actually been noticing more this year than I think any year is belief around Christmas time is way different than any other part of the year.
Yeah.
Like, people will believe things if just momentarily, even if they're kind of like, ultimately they kind of think it's ridiculous, they still go through the motions, you know, of like,
because they want presents,
right? I mean, you know, they want something, maybe, but you know, also it's just that, you know, for a lot of people, I think, you know, going to church or having any kind of belief system, can feel ridiculous or like a waste of time, mm-hmm. or you know, disheartening, ultimately like a letdown. But at Christmas, everybody, and I say everybody, it's kind of a general thing, but a lot of people buy into things that they normally, if they really considered like the kind of supernatural element of normally outside of tradition, they might not adhere to, might think is ridiculous, you know. Mm-hmm. And I say supernatural because, you know, we're talking about quite literally supernatural, not like spectacular supernatural. We're talking about something that works outside of our nature. Yeah. And so it's kind of like the big question I'm kind of pondering about all of this is, why is belief so ridiculous at every other part of the year but not at Christmas?
Well, even further than that, why is belief so ridiculous, or why is belief so accepted at children's ages, mm-hmm. but it's so ridiculous at every other age group? You know, why do people who adamantly believe that there's no such thing, I want to call it magic, for the sake of the movie, I'll call it magic, for the sake of, you know, real life discussion, well, supernatural or wonder, mm-hmm. that they're adamant that those things aren't real, mm-hmm. that those things can be explained and explained away, but they spend so much time telling children to believe in things like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the full train of thought that I'm like germinating on. Is this quote from the Zeke Film Review that says, Christmas offers us a chance to be the better versions of ourselves. They offer us a chance to be the people we've always wanted to be. We hope that people truly are underneath the facades, the stress, the hurt, the bitterness, and vices. I think that, you know, because, like, I would say that we all have the same, like, emptiness, the same fragmentation in our nature that needs to be filled with something that is, you know, immortal, that, you know, that lasts forever. I feel like we've said, we all want that. We all want to fill that hole. I think it could be easy to be cynical about, even about Christmas, because, you know, if you don't believe that there's something eternal that's lasting, that can fill that hole forever, then I think that it's actually legitimate to say it's just a season where everything is fluffy and light and we're all like, yay, happy, you know, family together, but mm-hmm. it's not going to last. It's going to be over, you know, the day after Christmas when the tree comes down or whatever. So I think that it would be easy to believe that, or to feel like the joy of Christmas is not really real, that it is just magic. But like to address then your question, why is it easier for children to believe in that magic is lasting? I think is because like our whole journey from childhood to adulthood is one of saying, is of other adults saying, you need to be independent, not dependent. You need to learn that, you know, you have to take care of yourself, that you have to be practical, whatever. It's like a process of kind of killing off those things that we, you know, the magic we want to believe in, the things that we can't prove or whatever. So I feel like children who are used to being dependent, who are used to saying, I can't do this on my own, I need help, there are things that I don't understand, you know, mm-hmm. that my mind isn't big enough, or that I haven't learned enough to understand, that there's a place that you're in as a child that allows there to be wonder and magic, mm-hmm. and resting in mystery, you know, right. believing that mystery can exist. And one thing that I wrote down that about like ways that this film really tugged at my heart are those moments when Buddy comes up to Walt and he's like, I have a whole list of things for us to do, you yeah. know, or when he says goodnight, he's like, I love you, Dad. Mm-hmm. And watching when he like puts out there, this is who I am, this is what I want, you know, and Walt shuts him down, he kind of, it's heartbreaking to see him kind of say like, oh yeah, yeah, you're right, that doesn't make sense, yeah, that's silly, yeah, you don't have time for that, you know, like he like Etch-a-Sketch shakes away his list that he was so excited about, you know. And I feel like watching that is kind of watching often what the process looks like when a child is growing into adulthood, is saying, no, those are dumb. Put away your list. Be real, you know. So, like, I think, to me, that's an obvious, you know, the obvious answer to why it's harder for us as adults to believe in this lasting change or joy of Christmas. The end.
The end.
And that's all we have now.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, but that's the, and so that's the thing. When I have to come back to the question of why Elf?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is Elf beginning to become a tradition while other movies are, like, you know, what separates them from the movies that we grew up with? Or why is something like Rudolph or Frosty not necessarily continuing
mm-hmm.
in newer generations? And I think we live in a fairly cynical culture.
Mm-hmm.
And much like a lot of the films that I think catch on, they tap into something that we hope for or we desire, even though we would never really admit it.
Yeah.
And Elf shows us, hey, it's okay to be the light in a crappy world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how can you be cynical about Buddy?
Right.
Like, you can't be cynical about him because it's not some person who was a horrible person and then had a change. I think it's easy to say that won't last. Hard things are going to come. You're going to lose that. But, I mean, his whole essence, like, that's who he is. He yeah. doesn't present anything about himself that isn't completely, utterly true.
Yeah, he's very authentic. Yeah. And he's authentic in being what every adult still wishes that they could be right. as an adult. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I think everybody wants to kind of be a kid but not go back to the age of a kid,
right.
you know? And so that's, it's not just boy-like wonder. It's an adult getting away with childlike things.
Yeah.
And he, you know, kind of has to learn a little bit of how to be an adult, but he still remains authentic the entire time. And so, you know, that's a draw in a way that I think a lot of other films miss at Christmas.
Well, like, and when I think of his childlike wonder and him being a light, to me, I think there are a few better examples of not only childlike faith, but someone being in a world but not being of that world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what we're called to do
mm-hmm.
as Christians. Like, we are supposed to be interacting with, telling people we love them, not being ashamed of what we believe, not being ashamed of what shapes us and what shapes our personalities.
I'm with you.
Yeah, you with me?
Yeah, I'm looking at quotes. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
trying to find a quote.
I want your quote.
Well, I'm still trying. But, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I was going to say, I see what you did there. Because, like, you know, being in the world that
yep.
everybody's in, but not of that,
that
world.
That sounds so familiar.
Yeah, why is that so familiar to me?
Yeah.
But it goes back to my thing of, like, you know, if people really examine this, you see the kind of theological implications of it. And yet it's so acceptable at Christmas, it's not acceptable in a lot of ways at any other time of the year. But, you know, it's like, why is that? There's so much, and I think it's that cynicism. There's so much cynicism about just anything outside of just the day-to-day, go mm-hmm. work your job, make your money, and live the American dream or whatever. There's so much cynicism about, like, oh, you go to church because, and I think even, like, people who go to church are very cynical and kind of spread that out to the world. And so you see this kind of, like, we see this battle of, like, cynicism versus optimism. And cynicism usually wins out because it's a lot easier. So, you know, there's a lot of faith that people really struggle with because it's so much easier not to have faith,
mm-hmm.
you know? Whereas Buddy is just like, of course, you know, Buddy has the luxury of knowing it's true.
This is
yeah,
true, yeah,
that's the thing. Buddy comes from a different reality.
Yeah, it comes mm-hmm. from a different reality. So, you know, that's why we kind of see a faith struggle with Walter, and we see a faith struggle with, like, you know, the first one kind of to be converted is his little half-brother, you
mm-hmm.
know, who kind of just, you know, sees him make all these awesome snowballs, and he's like, this guy's awesome, you know? and so you kind of, like, you see Christmas cheer in a way is faith, that Santa's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Santa's coming, and he's going to bring you gifts, and, well, Santa needs help, so we need to have faith, and the Christmas spirit needs to be lifted so that Santa can, you know, essentially save the world, but not save the world, just give everybody gifts.
Yeah.
Know? But that is a really interesting faith struggle that's at the underlying surface of all this. But this movie makes so much fun of it that it's just, you just enjoy it. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I've always kind of been really disappointed about cynicism in the mainstream, not just at Christmas time, just normal every day.
Yeah.
Because it's like this all the time. You know, it can be very, you know, simple and very joyous. And that's how I see it a lot of times, you know, belief in what we believe. And, you know, so that's what part of why you love Christmas, because people just let it go for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of grace in Christmas that people don't normally have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, to comment on your question about, like, why can't it be this all year around, yeah, yeah. You know? I guess because the human life is so seasonal, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. even if you think in terms of, like, seasons, that the world goes through a cycle, and there has to be death, and there has to, and then there's birth again, you know, there's... So that's true about our human life. There's pain and there's joy. You know, like we're always in transition or whatever. And so that, to me, that's why I enjoy, or really feel like it's essential to live, for me, to live the year through like the Christian liturgical calendar, mm-hmm. because it gives you space to say, yes, I feel this. You know, you think about Lent prior to Easter. Yes, the world is broken. There's pain. I don't get things that I want. My body is broken, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. But then there's always a chance to also recognize there's joy, there's healing, there's hope, you know. And we're in a season like that right now. Like, we're in Advent. So we are acknowledging that we long for things that we don't have, mm-hmm. you know. I certainly feel that in my own life. And then we're allowed a season of rejoicing that we've been given the greatest gift, you know, that we, so I feel like in my experience, it's more likely for me to like fully be able to experience that joy when I'm able to acknowledge the hard stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more difficult to say like, yes, obviously, like, we have the gift of Christ. We have eternal life. We have, like, we pull from a well of love that will never run dry. But because we're human, we can't sustain that, like, every single day, you know?
Right.
So, well, I feel like, yeah.
It's not, you know, because I think some people get upset. I'm speaking in generalizations, but some people get upset that, you know, like, Christianity isn't all, you know, roses and pretty things. It's mm-hmm. not Christmas all the time. There's no magical planet that would make me name something like, I don't know, Trenzalore, that there's a, it happens to be a place Christmas called Christmas for some reason that it's Christmas all the time. And that would just, you know, be completely ridiculous.
That would be like the worst episode ever.
Yeah.
Hashtag Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. Hashtag TARDIS sound. That was a bad TARDIS
sound. Yeah, I'm glad you clarified.
Whatever.
And this is the part of the show where Mark tries to...
Back to Doctor Who. So, I mean, it, you know, Christianity's not going to be Christmas all the time. And that's why this is a season, and it allows you to just kind of stop. So I like what you're saying about, like, the liturgical calendar. I never really thought of it that, like, that way to say, hey, here's a season where you can just chill out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Just chill out and feel and what have you're some feeling. Peace and be okay with like the difficulties of life, because I mean I think that's what for me, you know, Christ is able to do is to set us free to just be real mm-hmm. and be authentic, and that's something like, you know, kind of what we aspire to be is buddy essentially, mm-hmm. you know, be authentic with who we are, what we believe, and even when we're in a dark place in a strange city with weird smells and gum free candy stuck to poles.
Hey man, it's okay. There's plenty of room on the Anglican train.
yeah, that's right. you know, I think authenticity is another thing about this film that's really, really attractive, because people want to be authentic, but I think we're all afraid to be authentic.
Well, there's a danger in being authentic.
Sure.
And be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think... So that's a struggle with me in terms of Christianity and even, like, trying to offer what I believe is truth and gives peace, like, to other people who don't mm-hmm. believe it, is that I want to be able to say, come on, it's, like, it's full of joy and life, like, mm-hmm. more life than you'll ever experience.
Jesus is coming!
But that feels... But that
Jesus! I know him!
But I feel like it's not, that's not the whole truth, because like it feels like a false message to say, and I think a lot of people do this through evangelism, like, come on, it's going to be great. And then they get into it and they're like, this sucks. I still feel hurt. And I, you know, and I still have sin. And I still have to deal with sin in others. And this isn't what you sold me, you know? So both are true, but I feel like, and I feel like that's what happens with a lot of evangelism is that,
We can go down that path talking about the dangers of surface evangelism.
You have a lot of a big Jesus party, and then you know, people get into it expecting
good luck living life, and how much that sucks. That's, you know, it's not the Christmas season all the time, but it you know, life is going to be really hard, and Christianity is honest about that. So,
but I guess the difference is that even though Christmas is not just a season to us. I mean, it's like a reality. It is a truth that is underlying everything else that we do, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like a period in which we force ourselves to be joyful or whatever. And that's why we can weather the seasons that are more subtle, the seasons that are full of longing, is because there is an actual North Pole with narwhals. And I talked to you. You know, this is a reality.
That's a great part of that movie when the narwhal comes out. And it's like, they're like running away. They're like, ah! But it's like, da-dun, da-dun. It's like this big thing. And he just comes out and goes, bye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.
Yeah.
And you're like, why the build-up for that?
Well, but that's the thing. Like, because I love it. Because it's one of the first things in the movie that points out what he's going to come up against, because we as the audience are what he's getting ready to come up against.
Oh, yeah.
We assume, because of our worldview, because of the things that we see and our understanding of how reality works, that this is probably going to be a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in the actual reality that Buddy lives, it's different. It's like those lines where he, you know, when they're telling him that when he goes to New York or whatever, that things are going to be different. You know, mm-hmm. There's rumors that, you know, the parents are the ones, bringing presents and stuff.
Yeah.
And Buddy just can't believe it. He's like, I suppose they think the parents eat the milk and cookies now.
That's so ridiculous.
Exactly.
What does he say after that? Doesn't he say something like, that's shocking? Like about,
oh,
like,
it's the look at the clausometer. It's like, how low it is. He's like, that's shocking. that's going back to talking about Will Ferrell. Like, you know, he's like riffing there, but like the character that he has, it's like this just innocence. Like, most of Will Ferrell's characters are completely uninnocent. Like, they're the anti-innocent. and so his riffing is usually kind of, you know, off or like just different than, but like this would just work. Oh, that's shocking. Just that moment, he nails this role.
Oh,
like,
right.
I mean, it's a flawless acting performance. It's really great.
Yeah.
Well, I think between the light to the world and the encouraging everyone to be a little less cynical, there's a lot about this movie that makes sense. That it's catching on,
right?
And I think the best thing caught on.
I think it's a
It's
we're 11 years out from this movie when it came. I mean, I saw it in the theater, but it's 2003.
Yep, we're old.
Yeah.
Blah blah. Time passing. Old.
Yeah.
Yada yada.
So I think it definitely breaks the mold as well. So.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I was thinking that, oh yeah, this has like a simple one-track message that's so pure and clean and awesome. But we didn't even really talk about the whole thing about finding belonging. So there's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of different facets.
So in the spirit of being less cynical, we will skip the come on moment parts and not talk about...
And not just because we probably can't think of any.
I was dreading that because I was like, I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean, like I said, since we're skipping it, we won't have to mention how Zooey Deschanel is a blonde. Let me mention that.
Okay. Since this movie is an iconic movie, I don't prefer Zooey Deschanel as a blonde by any means, but I like that she's blonde in this because she looks different from any other Zooey Deschanel role. So it has more of a lasting kind of feel for me because she's not Zooey Deschanel, she's Jodie in this movie. You know, so like since this movie's going to carry on and, you know, New Girl is just. That's very Zooey Deschanel, like it's kind of impermanent. You know,
not to mention at all the fact that we have an opinion about somebody and their hair color and what it should be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not really an opinion. I think it's pretty much a fact that, you know,
point in case.
Someone has been giving, like, a gift from God of this, like, lustrous hair, you know, and they completely go against that.
Yeah.
What is that? What is that about?
You know, this was before she was, you know, famous or anything. And I mean, I didn't even know it was Zooey Deschanel, even though I knew who Zooey Deschanel was for a long time. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was her. I mean, and
I think that every time I watch the movie, I'm like, oh, like, yeah.
And I noticed that, like, they also dyed her eyebrows, so, like, she completely does not look like herself at all. Yeah. And I actually kind of like that. I think it works for this, you know, lasting effect of this film. But.
Well, like I said, I mentioned that as an aside because it's funny to me to... that it has enough cultural penetration now that there are, like, intense discussions about this.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is a thing that happens. So that's just another ornament on the tree of the influence of this movie or the saturation of this movie in the culture. So let's just focus mainly on our favorite moments from this movie. And there may be many, and we will have to probably get through them quickly, Mark. So
he's just going to quote, like, basically.
Yeah, stop quoting the whole movie.
I'm pulling up IMDb quotes. I'm just going to read from top to bottom.
So Laura, what were your favorite moments in this movie? To give Mark time to look up more quotes that he says he can quote off the top of his head, yet needs to look up.
I just... make sure I get them all right.
I love the part when he's testing the Jack in the Box. I love it. And I had read somewhere, which just makes it better to me, that he is actually, Will Ferrell's actually doing that. Like, he doesn't know when it's going to come up. So his reactions are, like, for real.
Authentic,
yes. I love that. I don't know. I love a lot of, like, the line that always comes to my mind in this movie is when he's like, I'm in love, and I don't care who knows it.
Yeah.
I love that. And actually, this time around watching it, I really appreciated the love story, I guess, because just with, like, the way that romance is portrayed, particularly in, you know, in this generation or lately or whatever. I mean, it's just nothing like... it's nothing like what we see. You know, there doesn't have to be some kind of physical connection even before, you know, it's just so pure and sweet.
It's very innocent.
Yeah.
It's a very innocent love.
And she actually, like, likes him. She likes him, and he's completely himself.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. But I mean, there's a lot.
They did a good job of, like, you kind of see moments on her face where she's like, you're ridiculous, but it's kind of fun, you know, like, because she lives in a... kind of a, wherever she is in life is kind of a bad place. You know, her water's getting cut off, she hates her job, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he comes in and just, like, kind of changes that whole dynamic, and she really likes it. So.
And he doesn't change her circumstance. He doesn't really show her anything in her world that's different from what it is already. Like, if you think about the date they go on, that's the circular door or whatever has always existed. That cup of coffee is a cup of coffee, but, you know, he's like taking things that she's already seeing and transforming them in her attitude or her mind, you know, like...
he makes all things new.
What?
Snap.
What you did there? Well, and she actually ends up doing that for him because he's like, check out how big this tree is.
Yeah.
She's like, huh, I got one for you.
Yeah, and so she's able... she's probably walked past that tree a million times, and suddenly... she thinks...
she's seeing it again.
Yeah, she's like, oh, well, let me show you something. So, yeah.
Where to start? I'm gonna start at the beginning of the movie. Probably end at the end of the movie.
No.
I mean, I cannot tell you.
Don't squelch his childlike wonder.
I cannot tell you how much I love this movie. I love this movie. This is probably my favorite Christmas movie, or tied with something else.
something else.
Can't think of that.
You know, like, I loved all the actors' choices. I love Bob Newhart in this movie. I love him as Papa Elf. I love Ad Asner as Santa. I think he's the best Santa when he looks over in that bag and he's like, what in the Sam hell is that? You know, he's just got this great delivery, and I've always loved Ad Asner and anything. You know, so many quotes, you know, when he buys the present for his dad for someone special. You know, and it's the lingerie. He's like, what is this? And then she comes in when he opens it, like, the secretary comes in, she's like, ooh, who's that for? And it's like, intercom. You know, And he's like, who sent this Christmas gram? And he's like, what's a Christmas gram? I want one, you know. There's so many. Like, yeah, oh, he's an angry elf. You know, talking about Peter Dinklage. He's like, you feeling smart, guy? Call me elf one more time. And then he goes and kicks his butt. It's great. There's so many quotes. I can't even, like, there's so many coming at my, I'm having trouble processing them all.
I really like the mailroom scene.
The mailroom, yes.
I love that scene.
Yes. He's like, it's not.
I love syrup.
He's like, syrup and coffee? I never thought of that. And then they're drunk and he's just like, I'm like, you just gotta live your life, man. You know, they're having the conversation. It's so great. He's like, I don't think this is the place my dad told me about. It's kind of old and smells like mushrooms. It's not very shiny. I love the snowball fight. I love them stealing the tree from Central Park and trying to fit it in the apartment. And then he's like, how are we going to fit the star on? And he's like, I got it. He jumps and it falls down. There's a lot of really great, just, you know, not force-fed comedy in this. It's just kind of like they hit the tempo right on it or something. It's just the tone is perfect for the comedy, and you know, they take all these things that, like, you know, you kind of see all the time and they just play with it, you know, just little Christmasisms that they kind of talk about, you know, with the clausometer and just different. I mean, just, I don't know, it's just great. It's a great movie.
But if you could use one word to describe
super fragilistic, talishly great. I'm trying to make something up off the top of it. I love it when the elves are like, he's like, I'm just a cotton-headed Diddy Muggins. So he's like, you're not a cotton-headed Diddy Muggins. He's like, you're just special. He's like, how's he special? Anybody? He's like, you changed the batteries in the smoke detector. He's like, yeah, double A's. And in 6 months, you're going to have to do it again. It's like in the elf choir, he's like, you bring us down a whole octave in a good way. Oh, and one of the best unsung moments that people don't have to talk about, but I look forward to at the beginning of the movie, is like when they try out the trolls and they weren't housebroken.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, it's a little...
Well, I'm going to say, because one of the things that I love is the, there's only like three jobs that elves can do.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Like one of the Christmases, like you think of elves, you think of Santa, but he's like, you know, they got the Keebler elves and the shoemaking elves.
When they're all running out of the tree because it's on fire.
And these guys, but then there's the job that we call the show or the big dance.
Yeah. That's great. So, I mean, Elf isn't my favorite Christmas movie, but I have really enjoyed watching it over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's because I realize at the end it still always gets me. And it's that look on James Caan's face when he gets ready to start singing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it reminds me of earlier in the movie. And so, like I said, that's why it's not like one moment specifically. It's the culmination of a couple different moments that hit me. Because when he finally starts singing, it reminds me of the fact that what were you quoting earlier? When you know he tell when Santa tells Buddy that his dad's on the naughty list, but he doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that change happen. To where it makes me step back and apply that to, you know, what I believe. Because on the surface, one of the things that I dislike about Santa and the way Santa is taught is, like, you better be good or you won't get presents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there is a beauty that I think is understated of a man upstairs who keeps a huge list of, like, naughty and nice, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But to get on the nice list, like, there's nothing you can do to get on the nice list.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants everyone to be on the nice list.
Hmm.
So he sends a light into the world that says, I will put you on that nice list, even though you deserve to be on the naughty list. And so, like I said, there's a confrontation that goes on in my being of, like, now just take this and go one step further. Mm-hmm. You know, don't say that you can do it yourself. And that's why I love the quote, because I think, you know, he says, like, he just needs a little, like, Christmas cheer, Christmas spirit. You know, it's not like he's going to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
he just needs to see the world a little bit differently.
Well, it's when he starts singing, that means that that is him saying he believes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's belief that you can say arguably gets him off the naughty list. Mm-hmm. And it's just belief. Once you believe, that's it. You know, that's parallel to what we believe. But, you know, it's redemption for him in that he just kind of gave up on his disbelief. Mm-hmm. Because of the whole time he was just kind of very cynical and disbelieving and didn't believe in that Christmas spirit, you know. And we define that, you know, similarly, but in a much broader way.
Mm-hmm.
To apply to our life. And
I actually like that it takes him longer than it should, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, because even in that scene where everybody else is singing, you know, his son's like, hey, you're just mouthing the words. You have to actually sing. And then, in the snap of the fingers, he's like, he throws everything away and just starts belting it out, you know. So that feels true to me, that it's like, it's so hard to get there.
Or it's easy to go through the motions and not really believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a great moment when, like, it's... You can kind of say that it was his singing that finally got them just above their heads, and it's just to town. It's like whoosh, and you see that look of wonder on his face. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a really great moment.
So, with that, I would say that we hope everyone is enjoying this movie because we know that you're probably all watching it.
Yep.
And I want to give the gift of letting you know how to get a hold of Mark or Laura this Christmas.
What a gift it is.
I know, it's probably the greatest gift I can give.
It's the greatest gift.
It's like salvation.
Yeah.
Getting in touch with the people on the show.
Yeah.
So, Laura, if people...
They can't see your hand because it's a recorded podcast, so you went down the rung.
I went down one rung.
Yeah.
One rung from Jesus.
I don't want to be the person to tell you this, but people can't see you when you're on the podcast.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Isn't it a crime?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
So, Laura, how can people get a hold of you?
Frozen? Did you just do a Frozen quote?
What?
Like the guy from Frozen. And the...
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's an Austin Powers quote.
Oh.
Oh. I think like it could also be Frozen. Schwinn from Frozen.
Oh, it might be. Frozen. Yeah, they might have stole it from Austin Powers.
Maybe.
Austin Powers is a superior film.
Well, back to me.
Yeah.
Back to Laura. Laura, you know, if I was listening to this show and being like, you know, I'm having such a Merry Christmas, the only thing that would make it more merry is if I could tell Laura how great her opinions were, how would I do that?
Well, you could go to my website, laurafissel.com.
Oh, well, that was easy.
Yeah.
So easy. That's the only way, huh?
Well, yes, because my email address is on there, and my Twitter, and my Facebook, and all that stuff. So
what? So much information.
Yeah.
We should all probably go to that site.
I try to post every Thursday something that inspires me. This week it was Wild Bell, which is like an American indie reggae-infused group. Yeah, so I try to post things that make me happy and inspired. So you can go there to find that, or book reviews. Or find out about my novels.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Mark.
Well, you know, one day I'm going to be able to say, well, there's this movie coming out and you can go see it because I wrote it.
That's right.
But that's what I do. I write stuff. So you can find me on Real World Theology. I've got some stuff coming down the chute always.
Yes. All right.
Not enough. Judgy fizzle eyes.
That was the anti-judgy fizzle eyes.
I was anticipating them, but they did not come. That's nice. But then you could just hit me up on Twitter. Mark Wingdinger.
Mark Wingdinger on Twitter?
On Twitter.
Cool. Well, you can follow me at Fizzification, or you can follow the show at Real World Theo on Twitter. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com, where you can find lots of things from Mark and Laura, actually. Mm-hmm. Connect with us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you enjoy it, please, please, please give us a Christmas gift of giving us a 5-star review this year. That's what's really on our Christmas list.
Well, that's all we need.
So, yeah, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. So, again, I just want to thank Laura and Mark for taking the time to be here for this holiday special extra episode.
Heck
so,
yeah. All right.
Thank you guys. I want to thank you, the listeners, for making us part of your holiday season. And until next episode, have an incredibly Merry Christmas. And I hope that you are just a little less cynical. Not to imply that you are cynical, but if you self-reflect and find that you are, as we all are, then I hope you're less cynical. And please remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless.
Merry Christmas, everybody! I feel like if I knew that about your Christmas list, my Christmas would have been a lot cheaper.
Probably so. This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.
I guess it's called A Christmas Carol.
It is.
Oh. I thought you were just saying it's like...
No, it's called A Christmas
Carol. The Christmas Carol, okay.
I don't know how many more ways he could have said that.
Doctor Who, A Christmas Carol.